This is Trump on Earth. I'm Reed Frazier. Scott Pruitt has been a polarizing figure at the EPA since the day he walked in the door. But in the last few weeks, a swirl of concentric scandals has enveloped the agency and left many wondering if his days there are numbered. Even the usually friendly Fox News held his feet to the fire in a recent interview.
And who did it? It may be there would be some accountability.
A career person or a political person?
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't know who did this?
I found out about this yesterday.
Today, we're going to ask, how did Scott Pruitt get into this situation? And why he still has a job at the EPA? And we'll talk with a writer who asks, how effective has Scott Pruitt been, really, at dismantling environmental regulations? That's coming up in a minute. This is Trump on Earth.
Hi, this is Gloria Rudolph, mother of Trump on Earth co-host Reed Frazier. I support Trump on Earth through Patreon, and I hope you will too. Just go to patreon.com/Trump on Earth. It's a great way to help the podcast out. Thanks. And back to the podcast.
Sounds very good.
Take two, success.
First class flights, pricey office furniture, a security detail fit for a head of state, and let's not forget about that rented room inside a lobbyist's D.C. condo. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt is embroiled in an ethics scandal, but what does it mean for the EPA? To answer this question, we're joined by two people who are on Pruitt Watch and have been for a little while now, NPR's Rebecca Hersher and Jennifer Ludden. Welcome to Trump on Earth, guys.
Hey there.
Okay, Rebecca, let's start with you. You have been on this Pruitt story for a little while now. Can you kind of count down the laundry list of some of the things that Scott Pruitt has gotten in trouble for?
So a lot of it is spending related. As you mentioned, he has spent a lot of money on security. So that's not just his 24-hour detail, which is multiple people, but also on things that he says will keep him safe. So that's a bulletproof desk. That is a soundproof phone booth for his office that costs tens of thousands of dollars. And also raises for favored staff, people who came with him. You know, he used to be the attorney general in Oklahoma before he had this job. When he came, he brought people with him who had served him there. And at least two of those people were authorized to receive very big raises. This came out last week. In one case, a raise of more than $55,000. So that's misspending of taxpayer money, sort of writ large. And allegations that he had sidelined or demoted people who opposed that spending or raised red flags. So that really raises, like, sort of basic ethics questions about how he's using public money. And the inspector general is looking into that. And then separately, we have lobbyists. And actually, the condo falls into that.
Yeah, and let's play a little sound from a very interesting interview that Fox News was able to do with Scott Pruitt. Here's a little bit of that interview.
There were comps done. If you can go on Craigslist today, and it's been done in the last week.
But a cabinet secretary is going to go on
Craigslist today shows rentals for one bedroom of less than $1,000.
Really?
So, on Capitol Hill near.
I've never heard of an apartment like that. I've lived in Washington over 25 years.
Well.
Yeah, so this is resonated a lot. You know, as a D.C. resident, I think Becky and I, both of us can say like $50 a night is a pretty good deal. But even if you say, you know, the EPA says, look, he is paying something. And if you add it up over the cost, the course of a month, it comes out to close to market value. So, you know, that can be a fair point. Something else, though, about his arrangement there was that he only had to pay for the nights that he was in the condo, which is not your typical Airbnb arrangement. And then another wrinkle came out that his daughter had stayed in a second room in the condo, and that raised a red flag. In fact, the ethics official who, the EPA ethics person who, it turns out, was asked to rule on this kind of after all these questions came out, he had to come back and amend his statement and say, you know, I didn't have the full picture when I signed off on this. And all of this is really raising a red flag because Pruitt was renting this from the wife of an energy lobbyist who is with a very big firm here in Washington and whose firm has a number of dealings with the EPA and who, you know, the condo owner's husband himself also had some business before the agency, as Becky has pointed out.
Presumably there's, you know, VRBO, as Pruitt says, there's Craigslist. Why did he have to get... Why did he do this? This seems like, why would he have to rent from a lobbyist with business before his own agency? Has there been any explanation?
They were friends.
They were friends?
Yeah. I mean, depends on who you ask. There's a bit of backstabbing going on right now. Scott Pruitt says, this is a guy from Oklahoma. I've known him a long time. He's a friend of mine. You know, moving to D.C. is hard. It came out of nowhere. You know, you get appointed to these big jobs. You still have a home and a family back where you're from. He said, I was living out of a suitcase. You know, I sort of moved in quickly. They offered to do me this solid by renting me this room at market value. And so I did it. What's come out since then is that maybe that relationship wasn't as close as previously advertised. Maybe they hadn't known each other for that long. And that maybe he wasn't a friendly house guest in particular. Politico has done some reporting based on anonymous sources that he was late in paying his rent, that the lobbyist tried to get him to move out earlier than he wanted to. So I think the thicket of answers about why he would rent this room is dense.
And still unanswered.
And still unanswered.
Which leads us to some other sort of questions about a lot of these scandals that he finds himself in. Is like, did he not know that people would find out or care? Like, why did he do this? I mean, is it just that he's coming from Oklahoma and into this big fishbowl of Washington, D.C., and maybe he just wasn't used to the level of scrutiny?
It's a good question because, you know, again, I don't know that we have an answer for the question here, Reed, but, you know, he is one of the more experienced members in public service for the administration. You know, a lot of the problems plaguing the administration, I think people are saying, look, they didn't, you know, they haven't served in this capacity before. But Scott Pruitt was Attorney General of Oklahoma. He did have public service in his background. And I guess, you know, especially in his role, you could argue he would have needed to be highly aware of ethics regulations. So,
yeah, I mean, one thing that I think is worth pointing out here that, again, you know, it's a black box of Scott Pruitt's mind and why he makes the decisions he does. But it's worth noting that this is somebody from my conversations with people in the EPA who recently left. There's very low morale. And what that means is that you have an enormous agency. The EPA is very large. It's a lot of employees. And you have a lot of people there who feel disrespected by the people running the agency right now. They don't feel like their expertise matters. They don't feel like they're being used the way they were by previous administrations. And so it's not particularly surprising to me that when push comes to shove, there might be leaks. There might be information making its way out about the less than savory decisions being made by the person in charge that under different circumstances might have been kept more tightly if he had better relationships with the people that he works with.
One of the details that's come out is just this security request that he's made, this bulletproof desk, which he didn't end up getting, which I don't know how a bulletproof vest would, I guess you could hide behind it. I don't know how that works. Can you guys talk about this security threat? Because the EPA has been saying that Pruitt was the subject of, did receive death threats. And is there any evidence that he did?
We don't know.
Okay.
In some ways, it's the perfect explanation because it's uncheckable.
Right.
But yeah, I can't say that he has or hasn't.
But it seems like he's very, it also just seems like he's very secretive, has been, you know, this phone booth situation. It reminds me, do you guys remember that show, Get Smart? Rebecca, you might not be old enough.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It just reminds me of that booth.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to the distrust that Becky mentioned, that, you know, there is such a rift. He kind of came into the organization. Let's remember, he sued the EPA about 14 times when he was AG in Oklahoma. I mean, he's made no secret of the fact that he sees a lot of things wrong with the way the agency, some of the things the agency's been doing. And, you know, he, as Becky has said, has not been taking a lot of counsel from some of the career staff there. A lot of the upper positions also are still unfilled. But he clearly felt the need for a super secret private soundproof booth to have conversations in his own office that he didn't want other people in the agency to hear. So I just think that does speak to the distrust, the deep distrust between, you know, this staff and Pruitt.
Yeah, and I think just going back to his relationship with lobbyists, there have been allegations that that phone booth, you know, you could use it to talk to lobbyists. But there's a lot of indication from his actions thus far that he is not being private about those relationships. He appears in public all the time with people from the industries he regulates. He's very publicly close to them. And so you don't need a soundproof phone booth to talk to a lobbyist if you announce, as he did, you know, 10 days ago or so, rollbacks on emission standards for cars and SUVs, standing next to lobbyists for the auto industry. Like, you know, there's security, and we don't know what that's related to because threats are secret. But then there's also these seemingly close ties and, to some people, unseemly ties to the industries he regulates. And that part is actually really, it's out there.
I want to get to what's sort of the reaction, not from just the general public, but just what's Trump's reaction been and how have other Republican lawmakers responded to this?
So the president has, you know, defended Pruitt repeatedly. He has tweeted and told reporters he's doing a great job. You know, the White House officials have said they take these allegations seriously and they are looking into them. They are investigating them. But when the president has been pinned down, he has talked about feeling that some of the allegations were unfair and that Scott Pruitt's done a great job. And we've certainly seen conservative groups come out in favor of Scott Pruitt and thank the president for not having gotten rid of him yet and you know, say that they find him very valuable at the EPA and would like him to stay there. There's been divided reaction among some lawmakers.
Yeah, a lot of Democrats want him to leave. A few Republicans are not happy with especially the spending. I haven't seen any Republicans come out against his policies.
Well, Carlos Corbello in Florida
right.
is head of the founder of the Climate House Climate
right.
Caucus. He's very concerned about climate change.
Fair to him.
And he has spoken out against him. And Susan Collins, of course, she voted against Pruitt when he was up, and she has
right.
spoken out as well.
And they've joined outspoken Democrats. This is people like Sheldon Whitehouse and Tom Carper, who have been campaigning actually for months. You know, this isn't new for them. They've basically been trying to investigate and now to have him resign, going back to last August, even, when the first reports of his spending came up.
And just context, you know, these are allegations of inappropriate spending of taxpayer money from an agency that, you know, official proposal called for cutting EPA's entire budget by about a third. Now, Congress did not do that. Congress actually gave them more than the White House had asked for. But presumably Pruitt signed off on reducing EPA staff, you know, EPA's budget tremendously while he was giving some of his staff members raises of tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing worth noting, I think, about Trump's reaction is that he and many Republicans have pointed to Pruitt's policy as the reason that he's under threat. They say people are coming after him because he's been so effective. And I think that's a really interesting argument on a bunch of fronts.
Right. The sort of the left-wing conspiracy that the lefties are freaking out because they hate his policies, not so much because what he's done is all that egregious.
And also this question of whether he actually has done all that much.
Right. How effective has he been? Right.
So I want to ask sort of in the hypothetical and in the event that something changes in the interim between when we record this interview and when we actually post it, if Pruitt were to leave, do we have any sense of what the policy implications would be for Pruitt and the EPA, for the EPA and this deregulatory mission that he's really embarked on?
Well, I think that, you know, while he has been lauded by supporters as one of the most effective administration officials and certainly has just been gung-ho at, you know, trying to repeal and moving to pull back a number of policies, the fact is it's a really long process to deregulate. You know, the officials in the thick of this like to say it takes as long to deregulate, to get rid of a law as it does to create a law. And we have already seen a number of courts push back. I mean, the EPA had to pull back on trying to put off regulations around ozone pollution. They had their attempt to block methane emissions restrictions that was blocked by a court, and now they've been sued by 14 states because they're behind schedule in rolling out these restrictions on methane emissions. And legal experts say that we could see more pushback from the courts on major rollbacks, like with the Clean Power Plan that regulates emissions from power plants, and the recent fuel economy standards that Pruitt just announced. You know, legal experts who've looked at the documents here are like, we don't see the scientific evidence that the law requires for showing why the current rule is not that needs to be changed, and what is the basis for the new proposal that you want. And so they feel that once these regulations or these proposed changes make it to the courts, they may not hold up very well. And then there's frustration among Pruitt supporters that while he's been moving to repeal a lot of policy, he hasn't actually been so quick to rewrite. You know, we've had a move to repeal the Clean Power Plan, but we don't know what the administration wants to put in its place. And they're actually legally obligated to regulate carbon emissions in some way. And so, you know, you're kind of, if you're behind on that now and Pruitt is no longer the head of the EPA, that would be left to the next person to replace him to figure that out.
And do we have any idea who his replacement could be?
Well, the most likely candidate is Andrew Wheeler. So Andrew Wheeler was nominated last year to be the deputy administrator of the EPA. He has not been confirmed. He is expected to be confirmed in the next couple days. So, and he is a creature of Washington. So in some ways, he's different from Pruitt. You know, Pruitt came from Oklahoma. Andrew Wheeler has lived and worked in Washington basically his whole career. One of his first jobs out of law school was at the EPA. He was a young lawyer in the Office of the General Counsel. He worked on chemical policy there. And after that, he left. And since then, he has basically worked on a Senate committee and for Senator James Inhofe, who's famous for his climate-denying antics on the floor of the Senate.
Senator Snowball.
Exactly. Senator Snowball. This is Senator Snowball's right-hand man. So Andrew Wheeler, like, he has this reputation for standing behind policies put forward by Senator Inhofe that either denied or cast doubt on basic climate science or regulated emissions in ways that, or advocated for the regulating of emissions in ways that were helpful to the industries that pollute. So that is his reputation. After he left the Senate, he went to work as a lobbyist for a number of different companies, including a major coal company.
Murray
Energy, yes, exactly.
Friend of the administration.
Friend of the administration's. Bob Murray, the head of Murray Energy, actually wrote a short document right after Trump took office and sent it over to the EPA. It was his wish list of things that he hoped the EPA would do. There were reports that he got a thank you for that. So, you know, it goes without saying that Andrew Wheeler's ties to industry are strong. That said, he actually has a very good reputation among people from both parties for being a nice guy and an effective leader. You know, the federal government is where he functions. So this would not be a stretch for him in that way.
Now, should he be nominated, is there any question whether he would be confirmed to be the EPA administrator?
Well, the landscape has changed a bit since a year ago when Scott Pruitt was confirmed. And both sides, I would say, are very keenly aware of this. The Senate GOP majority is one senator less than it was because of the special election in Alabama. So the Republicans could not lose two votes or they would not be able to pass, you know, to confirm the whoever the nominee is. The other, you know, potential change that, you know, one environmentalist brought up is that, you know, now we have a year of watching Pruitt in office and seeing a lot of the moves he's made. And, you know, he was not going to go so far as to predict that someone would not get confirmed. But he's like, there's more awareness now. And maybe last year when it was just kind of theoretical, hypothetical, now maybe more senators might be willing to ask more pointed questions, you know, about the positions and plans of whoever is the next nominee and maybe even vote against them.
Rebecca Hersher and Jennifer Ludden of NPR, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Reed.
Thanks.
Coming up, why hasn't Scott Pruitt gotten fired yet? And how effective has he been? This is the Trump on Earth podcast. Stay with us.
Trump on Earth is produced by the Allegheny Front, a public media outlet in Pennsylvania that covers the environment. For more environmental news, go to AlleghenyFront.org.
And Point Park University's Environmental Journalism Program. More at pointpark.edu.
You can find all of our episodes on our website, TrumpOnEarth.org. Have a question? Email us at TrumpOnEarth@gmail.com.
So while Scott Pruitt has been defending his condo, his security detail, and pay raises for his staff, what about his actions at EPA? Some have suggested he's stuck around mainly because he's been so good at prosecuting Donald Trump's environmental agenda. To talk about Pruitt's job as America's top environmental regulator, I'm joined now by Emily Atkin, a staff writer at The New Republic. Emily, thanks for being on Trump on Earth.
Thank you so much for having me, Reed.
So, Emily, let's cut to the chase a little bit. Why does Scott Pruitt still have a job? What do you think?
I think that Scott Pruitt still has a job because President Trump views him as a political asset. I think that there is some truth to this statement that his effectiveness is what's keeping him in his job. I just think that effectiveness means something different to the president and to, like, the general public. To the general public, I think effectiveness means that you've actually accomplished some policy goals. That's not quite true for Scott Pruitt when it comes to getting rid of environmental regulations. Scott Pruitt has started the process of getting rid of more than, or delaying or weakening more than 30 environmental regulations, but none of those have actually culminated in a regulation being repealed that was not already on hold by courts. What Scott Pruitt is really effective at right now is looking like he's effective, is starting this agenda and being really popular among Trump's base in coal country in West Virginia, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania. And those people still like Scott Pruitt. So I think that that's why the president is still holding on to him.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. There is this picture of him that a lot of us, myself included, have painted of his work there, that he's been very efficient, that he's, you know, cranked out these rollbacks like he's, I don't know, some sort of baker on a donut assembly line or something. But, you know, there's this debate about whether or not that's true or how effective these have been. I'm just wondering if you could, you know, and I know you've written about this, tell us more about that.
Sure. I mean, like I said before, Scott Pruitt has started the process of repealing or weakening more than 30 environmental regulations, which is an impressive feat on his own to even started that process with so many regulations. The problem is, as I pointed out, the New York Times pointed out, Politico pointed out in the last few days, he's been going so quickly that the legal efforts behind them, these are all legal processes because every regulation is justified by a law, either the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act. And you can't just repeal them without a reason. And so because he's doing it so fast, a lot of legal experts are saying that they're actually based on sloppy legal reasoning that will eventually get overturned by courts. And it's true that at least five or six of Scott Pruitt's actions have been overturned by federal courts. at least 10 of his actions to repeal regulations have been delayed by federal courts. I'm sure he'll succeed in some of these efforts, but for now, most of them are in jeopardy. And some of the big ones, for instance, pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, that's something that Scott Pruitt convinced the president to do and something he's widely credited with. But we're still in the Paris Agreement, actually, and we will be until 2020, the day after the next presidential election. He's often credited with repealing Obama's climate change regulations. Well, he did put that process on hold, but it was already on hold even before he took office. If he really wants to repeal it, he'll have to create a new regulation. And that's just in the beginning stages. That will take years and will also be challenged by courts. So it's not that Scott Pruitt hasn't done anything. He certainly has done some things at the EPA that will have consequences, particularly the way he's been reforming how science works at the EPA. But I think the point is just to pump the brakes and say this is more of governing by press release from Scott Pruitt so far than actually implementing policies.
Yeah, I want to go back to that science piece. So you've written about this. He's trying to change the way the EPA uses science. And you've suggested that this should be more of a scandal than, say, I don't know, a bulletproof desk request. And part of me is wondering, are the scandals of Scott Pruitt, are they in any way connected to his sort of, you know, political agenda? Or are these just kind of garden variety, guy gets a lot of power and abuses it sort of unthinkingly and gets in trouble for it when people find out about it?
Well, look, the scandals that Scott Pruitt is embroiled in right now surround misuse of money or potentially him lying about his use of taxpayer money, having sketchy relationships with people from the industry. And I think that those manifest two ways in his actual policy agenda. Scott Pruitt has always had a close relationship with people in the industry, and that is how he's built his political career and how he's gained such high standing. Now he's the administrator of the EPA. It's the best known secret in Washington that Scott Pruitt would like something higher one day, perhaps president, perhaps attorney general. And I think he intends to leverage his political connections to do that. And right now, those connections are to large Republican groups and industry players. When those are the people that you're courting, that you're taking rental deals with for a condo, then those are the people that you're going to want to do favors for. And so the implication of these, of that scandal in particular, is that Scott Pruitt's scandals inform that he may not be protecting the most vulnerable people in our society. The other part of that, I think, is well illustrated by an opinion article that New York Times former environment reporter Justin Gillis wrote the other day. Scott Pruitt has been, for his entire career, lying, that's Gillis's word, about climate change. He's been casting doubt on the science, whether it's human-caused, whether climate change is really harmful to people. And he characterizes that as a lie, because we all know that anyone with common sense knows that climate change is real and it's harming people. And his argument is that if Scott Pruitt, who's in charge of protecting the most vulnerable people in our society, is willing to lie about the problem that's going to impact the most vulnerable people, what else is he willing to lie about? So I think we have a larger problem than just spending money on first-class flights.
We've talked about Trump's voter base, but what about Trump's donor base, people like the Koch brothers? Pruitt has been sort of their agent in government in realizing sort of decades of visions of rolling back environmental regulations and kind of peeling back the administrative state that they think is choking, you know, their industries and the prosperity of the country. You know, we've heard calls obviously from Democrats and even some Republicans for Pruitt to step down. But what have we heard from Trump and, you know, Koch world writ large?
The donor base is behind Pruitt 100%. More than 100 conservatives, many aligned with big groups like Heritage Foundation, ALEC, Tea Party Patriots, signed a letter the other day, I think it might have been Friday, in support of Scott Pruitt, saying Scott Pruitt is implementing our agenda. He's doing a good job. These scandals are nothing. We're behind him 100%. They're in solidarity. And I think that that's a huge similarity between Scott Pruitt and Trump. Trump is a controversial figure, and he always has been. But he's always retained a large level of support, you know, wavering here and there, but a large level of support from the conservative donor base and mainstream Republicans who say, well, he's implementing the policies that I want to see, so I'm going to forgive these scandals and potential ethical lapses because the policy is more important. And that's, I think, what we're seeing with Scott Pruitt, too. He's got the support of most, you know, important Republicans in Congress that he needs support from, the chairman of the Senate Environment Committee, John Barrasso. He's got that. Ted Cruz, other powerful Senate Republicans, and he's got the backing of the donor base because they want to see these Obama-era regulations repealed. They want to see climate and air pollution science have a smaller role at EPA. And Scott Pruitt, you know, whereas he hasn't done all of it yet, he's sure trying.
So that kind of leads to this next question I had for you, which was the line of thinking among conservatives about Scott Pruitt is that, you know, the reason Scott Pruitt is in getting into all this trouble and having all these scandals is that there are all these left wingers out there who he's driving crazy because he's so good at his job. They want to see him out and they're stoking this outrage machine. What do you make of that argument?
I think that half of it is right and half of it is wrong. I think that the left is extremely outraged at Scott Pruitt. And they do want to see him gone because of the policy actions that he's taken. I don't think that it's because he's so good at his job. It's because he's starting the process of a lot of things that environmentalists, people on the left, find abhorrent. Not just the rollback of environmental regulations like we've talked about, but he's proposed a policy that would make it so the EPA can't consider most air pollution science, science that shows that pollutants like soot and mercury can trigger premature death. That's a complicated policy that we could get into if you want, but that's the essential effect of the policy. And it hasn't gone through yet, but if it does, then the EPA can't use the best available science to justify protecting public health, which is a huge deal, and that can have lasting consequences. At the same time, two things can be true at once. The left probably does want him gone because of what he's doing at EPA, but also he is involved in a lot of ethical and corruption scandals that don't look good no matter who you are.
Emily, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Emily Atkin is a staff writer at The New Republic. You can find her there at newrepublic.com or on Twitter at EMORWEE. Thanks for listening to Trump on Earth. If you like our show, please consider supporting us through Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/TrumpOnEarth. You can find all of our episodes online at TrumpOnEarth.org. We'd also love to hear from you on email. What topics do you want to hear about? You can email us at TrumpOnEarth@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us there. This is a production of the Allegheny Front, a public radio show that covers the environment in Pennsylvania. We're at AlleghenyFront.org and Point Park University's Environmental Journalism Program. More at pointpark.edu. Our producer and digital editor is Andy Kubis. I'm Reed Frazier. We'll see you next time.